Hey guys, welcome to the MC Anime Podcast. We cover anime, geek culture, Japanese aesthetics, and Asian studies. We are a multi-fandom podcast, and you can expect to hear topics in your favorite hobby or fandom activity potentially. You can find MC Anime on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. Also, please check out mcanimepodcast.com, our website. Furthermore, stay tuned in for another episode.
Hey guys, it's MC from MC Anime Podcast. We're back with another episode, and Crystal's back with us as a special guest and feature speaker. How's it going?
It is going just fine, MC.
Gotcha. So, basically, yeah, I'll give a rundown of who you are. They haven't only met you before, and when they can find you.
There is always that chance. They can find me on Twitter and Tumblr under the same name of ShapeShift16, uppercase the first S, and I am a commission artist online. As well, you can also find me on Discord.
And sometimes we can give some also other highlights for TCG prowess and maybe a little bit of knowledge of animation enthusiasm that she has. But it's mostly going to be TCG for this episode. So that's going to kind of shine a little bit more. So, further ado, today's episode is going to be trading card games and the mechanics behind them. So, what do you like about TCG games or trading card games?
I like two things about them. I like the collecting aspect of them as well as the gameplay themselves. I would say as a corner of my room is dedicated to one particular trading card game. I'm not going to stop collecting.
And with that being said, do you like being in the position or you like to do stuff like that?
It certainly says so. Especially when I found out about it through the anime that it's connected to. So, the anime is one way to introduce people to the trading card, to the card game.
Yeah, typically, establishing a show, movie like a visual medium, kind of resonates more. Sometimes the popularity, the thing that came close to TCG or the show or the IP property, typically influenced by how it works out. So the top five TCG games that we're going to talk about is Magic, Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh!, Hearthstone, and Vanguard. Capture Fight, Vanguard.
Beep.
So let's talk with the granddad in the room of Magic, the one that most people know the most about.
Even I have knowledge of it, and as for context, I am not that big on it. I have a Magic the Gathering. I have some of the cards. Been a while since I've played them.
Oh, okay.
It's been a while, but a friend seems like it seems like fun. You get the hang of it. It's easy.
True. A thing with Magic specifically, I like. Well, there's different applications. They still have seven attributes or elements, as they call it, and that's how the logo is. Is it six or seven?
I think it's six too. So if I could add my own input to something that I just recalled, Magic the Gathering, if I can know it for one thing, it is it's been crossed over with a lot of franchises. I saw Doctor Who cards when I went to Walmart one time.
And we're doing a new crossover.
And I found My Little Pony ones too.
Well, the Marvel collectible cards right now, the TCG, is doing a crossover with Magic too. So
it's like Magic. It's like if you want to do a trading card game, you can just ask Wizards of the Coast and say, "Hey, we're trying to, we want to try something out. Can we give your IP? Can we give our IP to you so we can make it a card game?
Well, so the Coast also did Yu-Gi-Oh! As well. At one point, they did Yu-Gi-Oh! In the beginning.
I am going to. Okay. I find that funny considering they had, there was a, considering Magic the Gathering got at Yu-Gi-Oh! Got on Yu-Gi-Oh! For having magic cards in the early days. So they had to change it to spell cards to keep them happy, so to say.
Yeah, there's some claims like that. So that's a little bit about Magic. Let's get into Pokemon as a general, but get them understand.
I mean, what is there not to talk about with Pokemon? Even I have the card game. I need a brush up on the rules, but the card it's reference art that I can use because I draw Pokemon.
Well, yeah, but basically, the decks of Pokemon TCG are built in a way where you have your Pokemon, I think your fixed main, that you can do battle with. They all have HP, but they need energy to attack. Once you do the attack with your support item, the training items, and like your support cards, you're actually able to go through your deck to get that energies to do the attack. At hand. And typically, your deck is specifically for one type of strategy. So it's usually one main deck Pokemon, and then you support it with all the different. It's like a theme deck.
That makes sense. I might look up a better way to do the rules. Maybe I can make my own Pokemon card. Maybe I can get my own Pokemon stuff wrapped up.
That's basics of Pokemon. When you get into Yu-Gi-Oh, you have different subtypes, but the basic premise is right points is your resource. Because Magic has mana, Pokemon has energy. The only management lifestyle in Yu-Gi-Oh is the right points. But
right
points to a degree. In the earlier game mattered, but over time, it's...
They really don't.
...in a matter of money.
They do not.
That and maintenance costs is basically the two things you gotta worry about at all times.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how they did it. And then you had, like, monsters, spells, and traps. And then monsters had the extra deck. The original deck was the fusion deck. For the longest time, before Synchros came to play, it was only called the Fusion deck.
Thank you, 5Ds.
Yeah. And yes, you had that controversy with bringing some cards as a deck. That's a big meme that floats around.
I know. It's called the Delinquent Duo. It's called the Delinquent Duo. The photo is the person who was doing it was a judge at these events. So he came with a... He came with a deck of 2,222 cards.
And the deck's main strategy was literally to shuffle the entire phone.
Was to win by the timer.
And it literally interact with the deck in a way where they had to keep shuffling. So no matter what card they did, there was that house that thing.
And now you can't have more than 60 cards.
So that's a little bit about Yu-Gi-Oh! We'll get into like the different mechanics of each game setup. Hearthstone is interesting because it actually introduces the people in the environment with different characters. And you also have the ability to play your zones. That's a little bit different.
I almost want to look this one up. I didn't do a ton of research on this. Oh, a digital card game.
Yeah, it's mostly, they have their precursor to the basketball.
That's why I didn't willingly do research. Oh, it's owned by Blizzard.
Yeah.
Given what I've researched on my free time, which is the failures of video game companies, Blizzard is not very good. So that makes sense. Hearthstone kind of has fallen off the deep end thanks to some controversy in China.
Yeah, that did happen with them, so I would...
I'm not going to get into this. This is not my place to talk about it, but...
Well, Hearthstone is kind of in that ballpark that you have to be aware of. It's basically a fast-paced strategy game.
A digital one. Digital only.
Library, and then you have, like, a different free-to-play digital card game. Interesting because it's all the digital, but it has a more refresh.
It's a digital only card game, yet it's in the top 5 for best trading card games. It only exists since it's in the digital variety. Must have been very popular before we know Blizzard kind of went downhill.
Well, it's digital only, turn-based collectible card game, which pits 2 opponents against each other. They select a hero from one of the 11 classes. So, they don't have monsters, they have classes like warrior, mage, stuff like that. All classes
like
have
D&D
cards and abilities known as hero powers, which define the class archetypes. So it gets into a kind of different ballpark. So it's like a D&D met card game and class together.
If Blizzard wasn't bad by now, I probably would play it.
True, it's not that bad. I mean, people like it. I mean, don't get me wrong. And then the last game is Vanguard. So what specifically about Vanguard is mechanics on it, like the setup?
Oh, well, this has come from someone who has knowledge based off the anime that it comes from. But apparently it is based around having a field of strong allies, as well as focusing on your avatar monster, the one that embodies you. And they made the life points a little easier to understand because you lose if you have 6. If you get hit 6 times in the damage zone, you lose automatically. There's no if, ands, or buts about it.
Okay. Alright. So that's a little bit about each game. So let's talk about specifics about the way you win, the way you lose. So in Magic, the way you win is through your life count. So they have a life count about 20. And each one, they have different zones and mana to manage such, like the lands they play are the different attributes. Then they have the monsters they play that require different mana and the different lands to attack, to defend, and do some other stuff. Like counter spells, kind of popular, all that stuff. But it's interesting with Magic specifically because of the fact it's pretty expensive, and it goes in different formats, and it's like, if you don't like this one, if you don't like the competitor, you can go to the commander and build your decks. It's a lot more slower pace of a game. It's not as quick as some other card games out there.
From my experience, I can agree, including the consequences if you need to, say, reshuffle your hand. That is an option. You can choose to reshuffle parts of your cards, your hand back to the deck, shuffling up. However, you have to you have to put the same number of cards that you discarded, or the same number of times you had to reshuffle your hand. That number of times, you have to put that number of cards at the bottom. So you can do, if you think your hand's bad, go ahead. You're gonna have a handicap anyway. So you do.
And Pokemon, the way you lose is through an HP of the creature or the pocket monster. If you do so much damage and then the HP on that specific card is out, then that Pokemon faints.
Or died, as some people.
Yeah, some people well, it, basically, it's knocked out of contention of one of your six.
Unless you have a revive card.
Yeah, even if that's a support item. So some of the support items can revive it back. And I think it doesn't have the full HP in revive. I think it has like...
A normal revive would bring back half of its HP. Oh, a max revive would bring back all of its HP.
So basically it's like that one of those items. If you're in the game, you can probably revive and it only does with so much HP.
A max revive would probably cost more energy or more resources to use because you're reviving it fully. But she said you can't... You have to kind of save those for special occasions.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because the resource management in some of these games is in a way that is interesting how to build up the strategy you used to cause to do it. Yu-Gi-Oh! Well, its life point counter is literally 8,000 life points. At one point it was 4,000 and then some version was 2,000.
And for Rush Duels in Duel Links, it's 6,000.
Yeah, it basically even Speed Duel has like 4,000. But that's all the different alternative format. But it's interesting because if you had a tag duel at 16, it was 8,000 per person. Give or take.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But in the beginning stages of the game, life points mattered a lot. Because the closer you would get on the beatdown strategy, the closer you were to lose the game. But now, we're moving to a point where life point, once you have at least one life point, you can still win the game. Basically, making a combat is more accessible than the older version.
That I can agree on. As between all the games that we're talking about, I have the most experience with Yu-Gi-Oh! Both anime and card game wise.
True.
I could say a comeback is a lot easier to pinpoint if you know what it'll look and if you have mastered the one archetype that you're good at. Good enough, you might be able to find a comeback real quickly. Just ask me and Cyber Dragons.
So basically, in the battles in Hearthstone. You still have life points in your management counter. It's just like you have the similar life in Dungeons & Dragons, but you have certain stats with your hero class. So those hero stats kind of are to your life point counter and all that stuff. So how does Vanguard work for life points specifically?
Well, as mentioned before, you can only have up to six counters. There's only six. If you get six, you lose. So the life point counter is a lot stronger. One big thing that's important to Vanguard is taking risk. As in order for you to attack with your Vanguard, if you want to attack, you do a drive check. Or twin drive, or in some cards, a triple drive, checking the first one, two, or three cards of your deck, respectively. You can get a trigger in those cards and increase your power, give you, let it deal, instead of 1-2 damage, let you get another card, let you heal, let you stand another unit, etc. They really play on that in the anime. They have a lot of fun with that. But the life point counters is not necessarily a bad thing either. You can use those to activate abilities or effects of the monsters yourselves. They need a counter blast activate.
Okay.
So you'd have to turn the cards from face up, which where they normally read, to face down, saying that they've been used. And you'd remove a face down card if you're using a heal trigger. It's a lot of fun when you want. It's a lot of fun and often very intense when you want. If you want to watch a game or two.
Well, it's kind of interesting to see how that is. So now we explain life points a little bit. Let's expand the sequencing of the tone how you play your tone. So, with magic, you have a different card library, so you draw your deck, and then when you go into it, you have your monster, you have your creatures. They're not called monsters, they're called creatures. Then you have your lands, and then you have your mana. The lands are extinguished resources. The mana also gives you ability to attack to deem certain abilities from the creatures and activation on certain cards too.
And some of them need certain mana. Like, you need 2 force mana to summon this creature. You need 2 normal mana to do this.
Yeah.
It's important to pay attention because sometimes they need a certain amount of maybe even 2 or even 3 different kinds of mana in order to summon, use effects, attack, etc.
And magic has so many different archetypes for the different types of decks. It's really hard to actually plan what they're going to do, because they can fully block or they could actually go in a motion that would lead into the counter spell or the actually aspects of specifically attacking. They're going to attack. You have to declare which one you can attack with, and each one has to attack in the clarification that you're doing it. Because you can only switch from attack, defense, attack, that's it. And if you don't attack and you put it in, it's viable to be attacked the next turn by your opponent.
I can see why they had.
And if it did attack, it goes back to your thing. So if it attacked, now you said, okay, now it has to put it in defense. Now I have to use resources to put it back on attack of them. And Pokemon, with its sequencing, is a little bit. With Pokemon specifically, what's the sequencing like?
I'm familiar with the game, so I'm familiar with the video games and the anime. My question is, why are you asking me? I'm going to assume it is because you need to have the energy required to summon, to get that Pokemon attack, essentially. Also, keep in mind if it has a weakness, if the weakness means it gets its any damage dealt is doubled, so you might need a calculator to go along with it. As well as you also, because Pokemon is that kind of a card game, there are effects that require you to roll a dice or flip a coin.
Yes. And I use that mechanic a lot more specifically because they introduce a random chance of events to introduce the types of attacks. Like, they. You want to hit Thorny Swipe. Well, Thorny Swipe as a move in the card game would be determinative about the amount of the requirement for the amount of time to attack. So you roll the dice, and that's how many times, 3 to 5, it would do it. Sometimes it's only 2. And if it's a crit, I believe each attack you roll a die to determine if it has that advantage or not.
I'm going to do the joke. Are we playing Pokemon or D&D? Do I need to roll for initiative?
I mean, the trading card game, the amount of damage it does determine if it's equipped is based on the mana you did. Well, the damage count is a little bit different, so we'll get into that. But you will roll the random chance of events to determine if it does regular damage, and then the damage between the HP to the ability and all that stuff. The secrets of events, first person goes, they don't draw a card. And you're
more importantly, the but they more importantly, it's either decided by a coin flip or game of rock, paper, scissors, and set for the person to even decide who goes first.
Well, there's actually different ways to determine who goes first. But some people determine by the highest rock score on the bottom of the deck. Some people determine with high roll or low roll, and they roll a die, one die, you know, it's a higher number, or a coin flip. But typically, they would use the die roll to determine most of the time, because RPS is kind of, RPS is mostly for the emulating and the simulating. The coin flip, only at 50-50, so people like the chance to get high and then they decide if they want to go first. So typically, it's more advantageous to go first because your plays get less interrupted. Second is like a strategy to pick. You have six cards to break down the board more. So going first, you have less. You have one less card, no battle phase. And you have to set up a board, and then your opponent has one more card than you when they start. So, in that way, they have more card economy to break your board by battle or effects to nitpicking.
I mean, the Cyber Dragon deck that I play actually benefits from going second. One of the core cards has an effect where it can be special summoned without a tribute when your opponent controls a monster and you don't. So you can summon out a level 5 monster immediately, then you can use your normal summon on a different monster. It becomes Cyber Dragon. You can choose the Power Bond, you can choose the XZ summon, you can choose to Overlord Fusion. You got a lot of options. Depending on the strategy of whatever your hand has will depend on what you can do in the turn.
Well, so that's a little bit about Yu-Gi-Oh! Hearthstone. Hearthstone is interesting. The turn who goes first, the coin flip is flipped. If they have a coin flip, the player who goes first draws 3 starting cards. So it's kind of interesting. They're a little bit different setup. They go second, they get an extra card and the coin. Each player draws a card every turn. Each player is granted 1 additional mana crystal every turn, so they also have mana crystals as their resource. Each person will replenish with mana every turn. This kind of gets interesting because every turn their resource economy gets back, so they reset it, just like Rush Duel kind of. Oh, yeah, that's a different story. Player can have is 10. The maximum amount of cards that I can have is 10. You have 1 weapon equipped at any time. You have a maximum of 7 minions on the board at once. So you have 7 people to fight on the board, while the zones can be different in the different card games. And if a player has no cards left in the deck, every time they try to draw a card from the draw at the start, they will start to take damage, starting with 1 card and discretion on every card draw. That's interesting because it's not a lose all your cards, you're not able to play. You just don't have any cards to replenish with on the field. So that's kind of a little bit about set up with Hearthstone, how they operate. Or what's the secret thing with Vanguard?
My favorite response to this, pull up a chair. We've got a lot to talk about.
General explanation.
I'll try my best, but the idea is you'll get stronger with every turn. It's the same methods that can be used to determine who goes first and who goes second, both sides. Hand advantage. But there is the one thing to note. You always start as a grade zero, and at every turn, you upgrade to another grade. The max you get is 3. Once you get the max grade level 3, you can put down any monster you want without consequences. So, if you have a grade 1 avatar, you can't put a grade 2 down until you have a grade 2 avatar. So, that's the hiccup with early gameplay. You have to wait until you have the ability to put down stronger cards. Hopefully, you would have had the opportunity to either build up a good army of 5 background pieces and 1 avatar to be able to take out your opponent in real quickly. Well, it's knowing what the effects of the monsters are and how they'll benefit each other around each other, as well as keeping in mind, are you keeping in the same clan? That's beneficial.
All right, well, that's a little bit about Vanguard. And a common thing in most of these games, except for one, is the slow build of resources to build the board that is ideal to win. I would say that. It can take multiple turns, and Magic is no separate to get outside of the zone with the creatures, with the mana, to be able to attack, plus to have the zones, the land available to also do something with it.
Yep.
So you need to spend the amount of resources to gain it. Yu-Gi-Oh! You can set up an entire board in one turn. And then beyond 3, set up another board. If you have the cards to do it and activate the effect. Every other board we mentioned, Hearthstone, Magic, Pokemon, Vanguard, they slowly build up their field to take out the other person's field.
Yes.
So that's kind of how they mostly play with the resource management. They use the resources like mana or crystals or I believe you said with the upgrades with the card Vanguard. Whatever grade you have, then that's a turn where you can do. So you have to prolong the turn to get the upgrade you want to achieve the sequencing of the cards to use it.
Yep.
So basically, most TCGs, you have to strategically use the resources you have to make the best out of the situation. So with that being said, you might have to conserve some resources to play the game, because if you use all of them at once, you might not be able to come back as quickly as playing when you first start.
Example of that is Card by Vanguard has an option during your opponent's turn. You can choose to guard an attack that they're doing on your Vanguard, which if you choose the right monster will reduce the amount of attack it'll do to you, and thus it won't be able to deal damage. But if you use up your whole hand to build your board the previous turn and don't get enough resources recovered from it, you just left yourself wide open for 3, possible 3 minimum attacks.
One thing was actually accessing these cards to play.
I believe all of the above can be accessed by going to your local card shop or wherever you buy your card games, except for Hearthstone.
Yes, all sorts of digital microtransaction.
Currency microtransaction.
I mean, Magic has it as well, and they have a digital platform.
True.
So does Mastodon with the gems. So, and Duel Links, so keep on.
Duel Links, Master Duel, Konami's got two ways to microtransaction you out of trading cards.
Yeah. Magic, I think, they're distributors Wizards of the Coast.
Which actually was the previous distributor of both Yu-Gi-Oh! And Pokemon. It seems to be the golden way to outsource these card games the first time, and then they decided, I'll do it myself.
Well, they did too much Wizards of the Coast. Magic has always been a streamlined product that they handled really good. Now, the distribution on other card games is that question and force these other TCGs to get into the market themselves. You have to remember, and specifically in the TCG, which is the trading card version, not the OCG, which is the original card game, the original actually had their own distributors with the company did it. So the TCG from the Western audiences and Wizards of the Coast was so big at one point that it managed different card games.
I thought that was only a Yu-Gi-Oh! Issue. I thought the bandwidth was the only thing that I had to worry about with the OCG and the TCG. You're telling me I have to worry about that with the other card games on this list?
Yeah, Pokemon has a bandwidth too. But Magic also had the ban list for the competitive format, plus the commander format. Magic has the most of a ban list than any other card game. Because they can have 15 different formats.
I think I'm glad that I only had to deal with four Yu-Gi-Oh! One, the OCG one, the DCG, the Master Duel, and the Duel Links bandwidth.
But don't forget
Rush Duels has an OCG one and the Duel Links one.
Well, Yu-Gi-Oh! Also has Worlds too, so they have a different bandwidth as well.
I believe me watching YouTubers reacting to the bandwidth every couple months or so says otherwise.
Well, the other TCGs that actually tend to do well with their ban list better is for the simple fact that they have a set rotation. So every couple of years, they redo the card pool that you can play. So every format, you don't get access to those cards that are out of the format. You have to buy the newer decks in that set at that time.
And you're wondering why I don't play Magic.
That's why Magic has so many different formats. They make it still available to buy. Yu-Gi-Oh! Just has a ban list and any card can be played.
Except for the cards, if the card is listed on the ban list. If it's forbidden, you can't play it at all. If it's limited, you can only have one.
Well, it's also determined by which format you're playing too, because each format has a different ban list. So you have to have the format you play and the ban list itself.
Yep. But still, forbidden, no play. Limited, you can have one card. Semi-limited, you can have two copies. Not limited at all, you can have the maximum of three.
Well, Pokemon's interesting too, because they ban certain high power cards itself.
I feel like that's an interesting situation, because even in the Pokemon video game tournament they do, they have different rankings that Pokemon can be based on their stats, based off what they can do.
Sometimes the ability too. Like, for example, Mischievous and Sun and Moon, it's an unbroken bond, so it's a banned card. for the simple fact that Mysterio has the mysterious message ability, which allows Mysterious to KO itself so the player may draw until they have 7 cards in the hand. Furthermore, it was easy to acquire Mysterious to play in the Duststone item, which, so basically, with Pokemon specifically, it's the ability, it's the support with that ability, it is the type of deck that it's just too much of a power creep. Certain legendary Pokemon cannot be played because of the high stats and all that stuff. So there's only certain decks you can use if it's not banned. And it's only in that set rotation too. Every generation introduces a new set rotation, which keeps the health, the card pool healthy.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And certain trainer cards get banned because they just work too many decks. So,
or they're just too, or they're too strong.
So that's how Pokemon plays it. It's the combination of cards working together, which gives you them banned.
That's the same with Yu-Gi-Oh. It takes the right combination.
Technically, in recent years, these cards have been too good, and they enable too many combos. So that's the issue with that game.
And the issue is, does the card do a FTK or an OCK or an OTK? Which, for first-time listeners, FTK is first turn kill, and OTK is one turn kill. Do you do either? Good news, you're getting banned. Although, they don't know when to ban cards. Although, I think for proof that the card game has gotten significantly better with handling some of those FTK and OTKs, a card that had been on the ban list since the beginning of it in 2004 is back to 3. It went back to 3 last year. So you could play the card in a tournament. It would be Yanakarasu.
Oh, Yanakarasu. So it's just power creep. Some cards get off the ban list because it's to a point where the card doesn't affect the game anymore.
At first, they limited the bird. Since they limited, they wanted to see how it did Since the Yanalock, as it was called, is not easy to make since one of the cards used for it got an errata. So.
Yeah.
Not going to be able to do the Yanalock with it anymore. And after realizing it's not broken anymore.
That's also something that can happen. They get off the list. But typically, with set rotation, it's usually banned for that format can do broken. And then once they move to the new format, that card can no longer be used. Sometimes they still use the ban list on the retro formats too. So Arena, how they banned cards in Hearthstone, they were related to the balance of the game. So most cards were removed either too strong, too weak. On the other hand, cards that require massive synergy in order to work properly, like Quest, also got removed. So on top of that, some cards were actually polarizing and felt bad to play against and also got banned, like Vicious Ledging, which is a different card that just read, after 3 minions attack a hero, you adapt. So basically, you gain an ability by that card. If they attack, you adapt and change the course of the game. It's also note that some of the cards literally just reads, whenever you summon a beast, draw a card. Apparently, that's too good of a card. They banned it for the card.
It's too simple of a concept. I mean, why do you think Yu-Gi-Oh's been banning cards with one sentence as its effect description for 20 years?
Well, Hearthstone, that's most of their card text. So, for what reference, their cards is literally a simple effect, and that's how they play in the game.
Yeah.
But they also ban cards in a way that if it's too weak, they don't play. If it has too much synergy to play a certain strategy, and you have too much resources to invest in it, they also ban it because it's also convoluted, too.
Can't be taken advantage of.
Yeah. And there's different types of arenas, like banned priest, banned rogue. There's like different shaman and all that stuff. So that's how Hearthstone does it. How does Vanguard do it?
Vanguard, according to what according to my research, it looks like it has recently updated its ban list. In fact, until researching this, I didn't even know Card by Vanguard had a ban list. I had never heard anyone talk about a ban list for the Vanguard series. My guess is that the cards that were banned or limited were too easy to take advantage of in the meta in the Vanguard meta.
Now we'll get into different types of strategies. So this is going to be a mechanic to all games. You have the type of deck, the role your deck plays. You have a defensive that plays more slowly, but it's more stealthy. So you play a more grindy game.
Yep, you are waiting it out.
You're basically a control deck. Then you get into mid-range, which is like between control and combo, but does enough where it can adapt to the situation. It can play a slow game, or it can play a more faster game with their combos. Then you get into like an aggro deck, which is aggressively attacking, aggressively high point monsters, stuff like that. And then that also comes with what's combo as well, which combo is you have a lot of synergy with cards, and once you achieve it, you're putting the resources at hand to do it. Well, there are different strategies throughout how the deck plays. But for example, in like Pokemon, if you have a mid-range deck, then you can really slow the game to a snail's pace, depending on the type of abilities and type of things you strategy. You have like statuses, you can aggressively attack. You have the smaller attack beaters that can use less energy but attack more times than the heavy cost attacks, so you have the mind for that too. Magic, there's all these different formats and all these different decks that have different classifications. Each one plays in a different way, and the role you... It's important to know which role your deck plays in that matchup, depending on how that deck plays.
That means you need to give the effect a reread, a second reread, a third reread, as many rereads as necessary.
If you understand the role of your deck that plays against the deck you're facing, it could actually be beneficial to you changing how you play against that deck. And there's certain things you know about that deck, how they play. You can maybe set up resources to combat it when it comes up, or have a contingency plan when that said combo comes up, when that said creature comes into play and ruins your board. And also, there's not necessary a lot of focus on cards, but there is. There's different cards that play different ways, and having a diverse knowledge of everything can work. And if you don't know, then you need to read a card in real time and try to pick up how it plays too.
Yeah.
So with that being said, what are some elements that you see in even TCGs that do it differently?
From what I've experienced, what you said earlier with the knowing what your opponent can throw down and take advantage, and that way you can counteract it and benefit from it. I've done that multiple times in Yu-Gi-Oh! Alone. If I'm going up against something that focuses on banishing cards, guess what? I'm playing Cyber Dragon. I have cards that can get cards out of the banishment zone. So why are you banishing me? You are giving me more fuel.
Well, also, with that being said, we still have to talk about the mechanics, how you win the game.
Well, I think for most, if not all of the ones, are the same. You get the life point or HP bar down to 0 or 6 for Vanguard.
And then sometimes you have some deck out, sometimes you have a contingency for deck out, and you burn yourself with your life. Pokemon, pretty much 6 Pokemon faint, your team's all of contention.
You have no more Pokemon to fight.
You don't have any more life to defend for 20. Once it gets to 0, you're basically dead. Heartstone, same way, but if you want all the cards, it starts burning you. You start taking damage.
Mm-hmm.
The concept of damage is pretty much applying throughout it, but how you take damage is different in each one, too.
Yes.
Magic, you take like 1, 2, or 3 damage depending on the attack of the, blocking and attack. And the attack directly, or they don't say attack directly, it can bypass your creature, attack you. In that way.
Yeah.
Pokemon, you deliver the HP, but you also have different types of moves that also make you effectively lose the game too. Statuses, if you're asleep, you can't attack. If you're eyes, you have to defrost yourself. Those are specifically how to get out of that. But the different abilities and different attacks generally how that plays out. Generally speaking, you die by HP or a status that limits your ability or drains your health over time.
Yeah.
Well, and Pokemon's interesting how it plays different combination of cards that other games don't have. Yu-Gi-Oh! You burn your life points down to 0. You have instant win effect. Can't draw any more cards, you lose.
Well, the four ways you lose.
They attack you directly, you go to 0. They burn you to 0. You can't draw and you reach the one. Or stone, similar with that as well, damage goes down. How about Vanguard? A different upgrade, you attack, and that's how you win? Or is there like other ways to win for other game account?
Yeah. The Vanguard one?
Yes.
Well, you reduce your opponent, you deal 6 points of damage to your opponent. I would say can't get any simpler than that. You need to make sure you don't get dealt 6 damage, and you need to make sure your opponent gets 6 damage. In any way, shape, or form, just make sure you have the ability to guard if necessary, make sure you have your triggers ready. Who's up for a fight?
Hello. So, one aspect of all the card game here is this. You draw your deck, and you play with the deck to search your deck to get the card to complete the combo, and you use the resources to establish the move or the attack or whatever the effect that you're trying to achieve. And that's important to know how to be able to maintain it. With the maintenance costs, you want to dive into that?
The cost?
Yeah, the cost of doing this attack, the cost of doing this action with this support card or something like that.
For Magic the Gathering?
Yeah.
The way I saw it is that you might be spending several turns building up the mana that's needed. Because when you play mana cards, you can't activate them. They're mana, but they can't be used to activate. So your first couple turns are you putting down mana cards. You reactivate them at the start of every turn, but if you put down more mana cards, you gotta wait till the next turn to use them.
Yeah, that's how that works.
They recommend have at least four mana cards in your starting hand.
Yeah, you know, it definitely mana is a big driven resource, man.
From what I've seen, I think you can put the maximum of two mana cards per turn down.
Yeah, you can play it, and then once you play it, it can go to your, like, your...
But you can wait to your next turn and use the mana you put down.
Yeah. It's interesting because in Magic, basically draws an incoming winner. You have three options. You can concede the match to your opponent, your opponent can see the match to you, or you both take a draw. So if you say there's no winner, judge comes over, you reach a draw, so what happened? Oh, that's what happened. You forfeited your ability to play. You ask them to see the match. Let's say player A, I would like to concede the match. Player B says yes. Player A says great. How about a split of the prizes? So if you concede, you still get the prizing for it. If, let's say, player A, if we agree to split the prizes, would you like to concede? Well, this isn't accepted because of the offer's contingent upon a prize split. This is bribery. You can't split it like that. So, you know, you can't do stuff like that to offer a draw. So that's how that plays out. Pokemon, how does a draw happen?
Why are you... I believe that the draw is one... You draw one card per
turn. No, not right? Draw the card, but like coming the winner if both die at the same time and have no more Pokemon left. Is the attack first?
I would argue probably the person. Good question. I actually want to Google that. So I actually want to check to see what would happen. How do you determine the winner in a draw in a poke? And then look up that meal.
Well, I do know the draw sequences in Yu-Gi-Oh is pretty easy to understand.
Yes.
A draw would happen at the time. Basically, the person with the higher life points, you know, the winner. So if you gain life points or burn your opponent, you gain the advantage in time. However, there were cards that got banned that offer draws, and it kept making the match proceeding going to game 5, game 4, in that way. Basically, if you won one game and the other games get drawn, you basically won one draw, and typically the draw goes to the higher life point. If the higher life point doesn't get settled, then you, like, if time clears up, you have to declare your attack. If you're not in the battle phase, then you don't shift the chain of the game.
Also, keep in mind, there are cards in Yu-Gi-Oh! Like Destiny Hero Dynamite, which if you discard one card, it deals 1,000 points damage to both players. So that's, so there are cards in Yu-Gi-Oh! That not only have the ability to end it in a draw, but your life points both go down at the same time.
And if you burn yourself, and they have an instant win effect at the draw as well.
Yeah.
If you lost the life point and instant same time. Yeah, you can burn yourself if you're using something called the draw or the ability, you can actually win the duel, but also lose at the same time that you burn yourself with the draw.
Yeah, there's a reason why Exodia is limited to one.
Yeah.
I'm still surprised that the pieces are only limited to one. Must be because it has an archetype now that it can bounce off of. So that's where you can play Exodia. You have more than one way to beat your opponent, but you can at least have at least more than one way to win instead of Exodia of Wyverns.
What are the Pokemon winning the tie?
Vanguard?
No, Pokemon.
It didn't say. I'm going to assume it would be a coin. I'm going to assume it might be a coin flip or whoever attacked last.
So. Well, with Hearthstone, it is the ability, can you actually tie? So, in this way, for example, if you happen to follow scenarios, if a warlock plays Hellfire, when both heroes are at 3 HP or less, your opponent has 5, and you have 3, you, as the Leaper Gnome, and then the Hellfire, you happen in such a case a tie, or what else? Basically, in that scenario, if you both lose in that, then you die. If the damage is dealt at the same time, and it's a tie, and there ain't no tiebreaker, you just have a draw on the record. And it's basically if both players are reduced to 0 health at the same time, it can happen if the game lasts beyond a certain amount of turns. So if you actually remember correctly, it's extremely rare in Hearthstone, but you need to survive the fatigue. Now, silver arrows can disconnect, well, you know, that's all the digital. So, tied display is a loss to both players, but isn't actually counted as a loss. Neither player will lose any rank, and it will not count towards the losses in the arena. So, that's how that's played out in Hearthstone. Doesn't happen as much, but it can happen under special circumstances. We add them to 0 health simultaneously.
Yeah.
But how does Vanguard happen with that?
With a tie?
Yeah. Are there any tie procedures?
Trying to figure out if there is one, because that's there. Okay, there it is. Trying to figure it out myself. Just give me 1 second. From what I see, potentially because if there's a tie in a tournament scenario, the person who activated the card which resulted in the game being a tie will lose. If you had the last play and it's a tie, congratulations, you just lost.
That's similar to how the loots get played. Typically, the judge comes over and says, the card that's causing the loot to be instant, you had to get rid of that card and get it off the field.
There's also other cards that have an automatic lose if it ends in a tie. An example of that is, if a player were to activate last turn or final turn, and it's a tie, and it ends up being a tie, the person who said last turn is the loser. The person who activated is the loser.
Interesting. Well, I guess it prevents the tie, but I guess they are the ones that were supposed for the tie to happen. And in their game, there isn't any tie as was stood because they want everyone to have a win-win match, basically win any scenario.
Gotta love it when they make up rules.
Win the match. That's how that plays.
Gotta love it when they have to make up rules for if a tie does happen.
Well, but I don't think it'll be as common as Vanguard how the game system set up.
Considering how the game played, I would be shocked if I could find you an example of a tie.
Yeah.
I can find one
defeatly. You simultaneously, or you take damage, so something like that.
Yeah.
There are different gatherings in the community that I like about each one. And the popularity of the ranking of the game is also determined by the pricing of the game. So, not only were these games based in popularity, but also in order in which they are marketed.
And if you notice,
the most expensive Pokemon, second most, Yu-Gi-Oh! Is the third, Hearthstone is the fourth with their access, and then Vanguard is actually relatively cheap compared to the other four.
Although, if you notice, the top three cards actually are some of the older cards in terms of trading cards. I believe it was Magic the Gathering. It's Magic the Gathering that came. Magic the Gathering was the first one to come out, if my memory is correct. Then, I think, then Pokemon and then Yu-Gi-Oh! But they all were in the 90s. So, there actually are veterans. They're veterans in the trading card universe. Yeah. The Yu-Gi-Oh! Franchise is celebrating a quarter century.
Yeah. Well, Magic holds the distinction of being the first trading card. And it was published by Wizards of the Coast. So, technically, Wizards of the Coast, Magic, in their eyes, is their IP profit.
Yes. Although they did do the outsourcing of Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh! At one point in their lives, they are mainly focused on Magic.
And Pokemon, I think, has a distinction really close to Yu-Gi-Oh! As well. 1996.
Okay, so I was close.
Yeah. But
Magic came first.
Yeah, it was role-playing developed by Game Freak, and the original concept went to the TCG. And then 1999 was when Yu-Gi-Oh! Came out. Hearthstone, the arena, came out, like, I think 2000s? It was March of 2014 when that came out.
That means Vanguard isn't the youngest. That means Vanguard isn't the youngest one. Vanguard started in 2011.
Yeah, but Vanguard and Hearthstone pretty much newer in the last 10 years.
They are card games from the 2010s.
Yeah. Well, then we're going to establish when, you know, the three juggernauts of the popularity kind of already got established.
Which I'm kind of shocked that two of them in the top five come from the previous decade.
Yeah.
I would think another franchise that did that, not just one card game, but has multiple attempts, especially one that's still going in Japan since like the early 2000s, would be on the list, but I'm shocked.
Which one is that?
That would be Digimon.
Yeah, Digimon has a pretty good access to his trading card, but
it has the Hyper Colosseum card game. That was the first variant of it, which was used in the third anime series.
But you also have to establish that most of these franchises are based on the actual concept of the game. Like, Pokemon was very created early also for TCG. You had the comics and the TCG directly followed after. Magic has been exclusively a TCG game. But then its franchise can have other implications, but it's been mostly a game itself.
I actually know something. Early versions of the Duel Masters manga did not have them playing Duel Masters. They were playing Magic the Gathering. So there was a manga that was connected to Magic the Gathering.
Oh, yeah.
It shipped over to Duel Masters, but yes.
Yeah. They did have them, just most of the focus has been the TCG itself. That's the main focus of Magic. And these other ones, like Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh, have been the main focus is TCG, Biblio games, shows, comics, stuff like that. Also, it's been solely a game in most of its journey. Vanguard had different interpretations and adaptations, but did the show come out before Vanguard or did TCG come out?
It said March 2011 for the show. I'm going to assume the manga or the anime came out first.
Oh.
And I like doing this. Yu-Gi-Oh! Was not originally based around the card game. That was just featured in a couple chapters of the manga, and people were asking about the game.
Yeah, that's when the game
was focusing on all games at first before they eventually shifted over to the card game that we all know.
Well, Duel Monsters is what the transition was.
It's Kingdom.
So I thought it was interesting the transition of the games, how they played out. Now, this is just a generic mechanics of these games. There's a lot more to the game than we discussed, but I feel like discussing Magic the Gathering specifically, Pokemon the Trading Card Game, Yu-Gi-Oh! The Trading Card Game, Hearthstone, and Card Fight Vanguard is established in what they try to do.
Mm-hmm.
Play the game, you have cards to be able to play the archetype, the deck, whatever, to win against the opponent.
Yes.
Think about a fancy solitaire. You play against yourself. You're trying to get cards sequencing in order. And think about a trading card game. You're just trying to attack your opponent, win the game. So, it's a different version than just decks of cards. It's not just a deck.
It's a lot more than that.
The pricing on the market, the secondary market, finding the cards in the packs, in the distribution material that they give out in a random format. So they randomly distribute it, and that's how you get the card to play it. That's how it gets access to the market. So that setup was the main focus of the main selling part of the game, how that continued. The people did keep buying the new product as they release it, like booster structure decks and all that. They won't be able to play the game as much. They don't make it accessible to the players to play it.
Yep. I would know. I have too many of them.
Yes. I can see that.
Dang it.
I only have like two, so it's not really a big deal. I'm not getting
trust
magic.
Trust me, I would send a picture, but that's probably going to get bigger at some point.
Yeah, you probably won't go into Magic knowing you.
Dang it.
You see, like, I like Magic now.
What can I say? I like the cards. I like the card art. The effects can be interesting. And I wish they'd be easier to read, but
Magic typically has a boss monster. They usually have a monster until they summon them. They use that deck to support it.
An ace monster, if you would prefer.
Well, Magic's the boss.
Oh wait, that's about the ace monster. Ace monster is the Yu-Gi-Oh term, and your avatar is the card by Vanguard term.
Yes. So, you would wrap this up. Was there any closing arguments you have for trading card games with a mechanic?
I would recommend, if any of these do sound interesting, you might want to do some research on the rules and how to play them yourself. And if you want to find what benefits you best, I'd recommend doing some research, seeing which ones will bounce off you better.
Yeah. Only one to outcast, so if you get into that, good luck.
Or you could be like one of our friends who loves increasing his life points to the point where I can't even get them to drop below 4,000.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. But that can happen. But just remember, in any game or trading card game, it's how you play it to benefit you to have fun with it. That comes first, and then winning and losing is secondary.
Yeah. So, as long as you had fun playing the game.
If you want to buy cardboard, go right ahead. You want foils, go right ahead. You want fancy art, go for it. You need to buy it for it. They're going to be spending a lot of money on you, but just keep that in mind. Sometimes the price curve of the metals out of contention for certain budget-friendly people. You don't have it, try to do the free version first.
Don't break your wallet to try to play. For all of the above, there are digital versions of these games. There are digital variants that don't use microtransactions that let you experiment and make your own strategies. If you want to learn, you probably should look for those first. There's a simulation for almost any kind of trading card game out there. You just gotta look for it.
And typically, try to find the ones that are officially made by the company itself. It's a lot easier to get into. If you use one of the outsourced stuff not by the company, good luck. Good luck.
Like, there are more benefits to using EdoPro than using Master Duel to play Yu-Gi-Oh! Because EdoPro, you don't have to pay money to get the cards. You have access to all of them
Actually, Master Duel is free. So technically,
yes,
you can get gems to open packs, and that's how you can get cards. But the lot slower process.
But EdoPro has access to all of the cards.
Also, support the official version. Don't be like Crystal over here. She's going to support the official version.
I don't even have EdoPro. I have Master Duel. I have Duel Links. I don't have a computer for EdoProbe yet.
That concludes this episode for Trading Card Games and Mechanics. Crystal, thank you for being here. Again, where can I find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Tumblr under the name ShapeShift16, uppercase the first S, as well as Discord. And I also on Discord, but I'm also thinking about branching out other social media accounts. Excellent point.
But that's a wrap. Thank you for being here, and see you later, guys.
This concludes another episode of MC Anime Podcast. MC Anime Podcast is available on podcast directories like Google Podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and YouTube. We also have our website at mcanimepodcast.com. If you want to directly support us, then follow Patreon blog MC Anime. Finally, if you want services for hire, then we're available on Fiverr for audio and video production, graphic design, idea consulting, and blog and article writing.